All right, it is Tuesday, and it must be Belgium, and it must be SalesPort Talk. Joining me in studio, Karen Lyle. Good to see you again, Karen.
Hey, great to see you, Rick.
And on the phone, we're quite happy to have Bruce Cooper with us, sponsor of Ullman Sales, Long Beach Race Week. He is the owner of Ullman Sales Long Beach, a racing competitor for almost 40 years, competing in boats from a dinghy down to 70-foot sleds all over the world. Bruce, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit more about what Ullman Sales Long Beach is all about.
Hi, Rick. Hi, Karen.
Hello.
Thanks for having me on SalesPort Talk. Ullman Sales, you know, it's kind of a lifestyle for me now. I started working here when I was 16 years old and never left. So it's in my blood. Ullman Sales has got ground zero for the operations here in Newport Beach, which is the loft here in Newport and Long Beach that I own and oversee. And then we've got about 65 lofts worldwide now.
65. So you started that in South Africa? You were training for that?
Yeah, I worked for Dave Ullman, and he's the founder, and he started with this loft in Newport, and it started with a couple lofts up and down the coast and one in Texas that wanted to jump on and share some of the stuff Dave was doing and represent the brand. And we're all licensees under Ullman International, which is also a California company, but the principals are down in Cape Town, South Africa, with our biggest manufacturing facility now. It had been here in Newport, and now it's in Cape Town, South Africa, for the lofts that have limited manufacturing. They can use them for their outsourcing for their own sales.
You know, your race week had over 100 teams, and I just wonder how on earth you can keep track and many sleepless nights. How do you control something like that?
It's pretty good entry list. It's one of the biggest big boat keel regattas on the West Coast, and we've been doing it for almost 38 years through Long Beach Race Week, and it changed from IOR racing into the PHRF with a combination of one design. So we've had up to 170, 180 boats before, and it's been before with the larger numbers. I go and fulfill sponsor stuff. I'm on the water with a coach boat with the three race circles, checking in with the racers, and then, of course, enjoying all the good parties at ABYC in Long Beach, yacht clubs. And that's how it actually happens, is the two combination of the yacht clubs make it work. But then we do overnight sail repair, too, so it ends up being kind of a double header, and recently with the J70s racing there, I'm a competitor in that, so it's triple header of competing, sponsoring, and then overnight sail repair. So it's a lot of fun that weekend.
Well, I guess you can compete in this fairly because there's a committee from the Long Beach Yacht Club and the Almidos. Do I say it, Almidos Bay Yacht Club? The
ABC. Perfect. Yep.
YC Almidos. Okay, and so. So they have different categories for each boat, and they have a race committee with a boat on the water. When you're competing in this race, what boat are you sailing on, and tell us about your team.
I've raced on the big boats back when it was an IOR racing and stuff, but I did take about 5-6 years off of just running around in our coach boat, and there's three race circles. So between the yacht clubs, they have their principal race officers racing or heading up each circle. But 4 years ago, the J70 started racing, and I am a partner in one of those. So it ended up being to help the class. I'm also the J70 Fleet 4 fleet captain for Southern California. So to push and get the biggest entries in, the J70 has been my boat of choice, and especially with the 2020 Worlds coming to Southern California, we're really focusing Long Beach as a good practice bed for teams that want to come to Southern California and practice.
Rick Tittle and Karen Lyle with Bruce Cooper from Ullman Sales Long Beach. And knowing how you're right across from Catalina, I was kind of thinking about how, you know, Mr. Wrigley, who owned the Cubs, he built a huge house out there. He took the Cubs out there. Was he involved in the founding of your yacht club, and how often do you do just pop over to Catalina?
Galena's a popular spot in Avalon, which is where the Wrigley Mansion and the Cubs all settled. That's the little town over there. Don't know a lot of the connection with the yacht club side of it, but there's races that Long Beach Yacht Club does straight over to Catalina and the Island Series, and they actually visit a couple of the different harbors along the race schedule during the year. But it's a couple races, and other yacht clubs host races over there, and it's one of the best things. Unfortunately, most of the races go around Catalina from Long Beach in back into L.A. or Newport or Dana Point. So I've actually been around the island probably more than I've actually stopped at the island. So it's one of those racing things that you wish you could stop, but you're in the middle of the race.
Well, I'm also looking at a photograph that has you, and you have a son, and also Sean Bennett, your partner in the boat, also has a son. And you guys all race together, or how does that work?
Yeah, we've actually got a good partnership in the first year we bought the boat and through the first season and a half getting ready for the Worlds in San Francisco, which was 2016 for the J70s. We had the boys racing, and it was a good weight combination, good skill combination. So Sean was the skipper. I was the front trimmer. My son Morgan was a trimmer. And then Connor, who is Sean's son, was small. He was an opti sailor at the time, so he was 65 pounds, and he couldn't do any big muscle jobs on the big boats like J-105s and stuff. So the 70 ended up being a good platform for our crew size and our abilities to put all four together, and had a real good campaign the first year. And unfortunately, it wasn't going to be the world's team at San Francisco because the kids were back in school already when that happened, and they couldn't take the week off. So Sean raced the boat, and he won the Corinthian division at the World Championships.
Oh, that's great.
Just minus the boys.
Now, I have a question for you. I was looking at that video on your website next to your bio, and it had someone small going on a halyard from the mast, from the, I guess it was the spinnaker or the jib, out to the side, the beam of the boat. Who is that?
That's one of my crew. I think that was from the 2011 Transpac on a TP-52 named Patches, which we won our class and we're fifth overall. Probably Pete Whelan is our bow person. I've learned to stay at the helm or at the trimming on the winches or grinding the winches. Anything off the deck is above my pay grade, so I can't get up there. But they go out to help change the sheets and check on, you know, the reinforcing in the corners. But that's an exciting video. It's pretty fun to watch that one.
Bruce, what would be next for you that you haven't done yet? Or have you done everything you wanted? Do you want to go solo somewhere? Is there an island or a boat that you haven't been in? What would you choose?
Well, this week's the Transpac race, 100th anniversary. So I'm doing that again for the 11th time, so that's pretty exciting. I want to keep doing those, but for the races I haven't done yet, something like the Sydney Hobart race would be fantastic, and race again in the J70 Worlds, so that's right around the corner. I think doing some double-handed racing. I have a twin brother that works for me here at the Sail Loft, and he's one of the best crew I could ever, you know, go find. So having a double-handed race again with him or my son Morgan would be kind of still on my list.
Very cool. That's Bruce Cooper, sponsor of Ullman's Sails Long Beach Race Week. He's been doing this 35 years. Best of luck in Transpac, and thanks for being on Sail Sport Talk.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks, Karen.
Great to talk to you.
It's been a busy season, and Long Beach Race Week next year is going to be big, too. So if you guys are around, we'd love to have some coverage there, and you'll see how special it is.
Sounds great.
Great stuff. We will do that. That's Bruce Cooper, and we have about a minute here. I wanted to ask you something that he mentioned to us neophytes, us landlubbers, and that would be, he said, trim and grind the winches.
Okay.
I have an idea, but I'm not sure. Can you explain that?
So the grinder is the person who operates the winch, and the winch mm-hmm. is something that
thing you're going.
Yeah, it looks different on a monohull. It usually looks like a cylinder,
right.
And it has a line. So every rope on a boat is called a line when it's working, and so the lines are attached to the sails. And when those lines are let out or they come back in, they go over a winch, and the grinder is the one who operates the winch. And under racing conditions where you're making quick maneuver changes, you're tacking quickly, that grinder is working very hard. And the trimmer is the person who is managing the sail. When you are not going close to the wind, you're going maybe at a what's called a reach or a beam reach, where the wind is coming over maybe somewhere between 45 to 135 degrees over the side of the boat. Then the person who's the trimmer controls where the sail is to get the maximum efficiency for speed for the boat.
Excellent explanation. Now I know. It's Karen Lyle. And on the other side, we're going to bring in Dobbs Davis, one of my favorite names. Come on back.
This is Karen Lyle with SailSport Talk, and I'm here today at the Treasure Island Sailing Club, and we are with the U.S. team preparing for the Olympics. And today I'm going to interview Chris Barnard. Chris, good to see you. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so I grew up in Newport Beach, California, just south of Los Angeles at Newport Yacht Club. Grew up sailing there in Sabots and slowly made my way through the youth sailing program and went on to Georgetown University, had a good college sailing career, got a great education, and now doing an Olympic campaign. So, yeah, exciting stuff.
And you recently had a major breakthrough in your career. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so won the Princess Sofia Trophy, which is in Palma de Mallorca, Spain. It's one of the top few events that Olympic regattas that happen in the world. So it was a really awesome event to win, and like you said, it was a breakthrough performance, and a real confidence booster, and shows that the program we're on and the path we're on is on the right path, and we're making really good progress to have Olympic success.
I would ask you if you can describe an experience.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I relate a lot to my event win in Palma, and that was, I felt everything was at the pace that was very comfortable to me. Nothing seemed too fast. Nothing seemed like it was slipping away from me or slowly getting away from me. Everything felt like complete in my control. Obviously, when it's getting better and better, all you want to do is push harder and harder and keep wanting more and more. I guess that's the feeling to me, is that when it's going well, it's like you can't wait to just keep pressing on the throttle even more, like go faster and faster and faster. And at least to me, it's like then I started going kill mode, if you will. High giants, like I just keep on going faster and faster. Stayed in control and made the right moves and had a great comeback, which was huge to my success in the regatta.
Now, you are training here during the summer for the Olympics. What are your goals for this next month, for example?
Yeah, so the immediate goals is that we're immediate, and really the big goal of the year is the World Championships this July in Japan. So the goal here this week was a lot of heavy wind training, getting the last little bits and pieces of technique we want to work on. And we end in a few days, and then we really go into a taper mode to make sure the body's nice and recovered, because all the hard work's been done over this last week, last 2 weeks, over the last few months. So when we go into these last couple weeks, it's really like, all right, all the hard work's done. Like to make sure we're rested and recovered. We're cleaning up all the little details. But yeah, we're really excited, and we're ready for the World Championship.
Well, I'm going to wish you every success, Chris, and it's such a pleasure to have you on SailSport Talk. Let me give you a handshake there.
Thank you very much. I'm really glad to be here.
She said, I want Tittle.
Interrupting all programs. This is Radio Clash on Pirate Satellite. Orbiting your living room, cashing in the Bill of Rights. Human army surplus or refusing of the lights. This is Radio Clash on Pirate Satellite.
Rick Tittle can usually be found at He Baby Mama House.
Back on Sports Byline USA and American Forces Radio Network Worldwide, Rick Tittle and Karen Lyle. It is one more segment of Sales Sport Talk that we do each and every Tuesday in the 9 o'clock Pacific hour. It's our pleasure to welcome Dobbs Davis, a columnist for Seahorse Magazine. He's been a racer for some 25 years. He's been a champion as well. He's competed in just about every major offshore race and inshore regatta in the United States and around the world. And first of all, Dobbs, welcome to the show. And tell us a little bit more for us who don't know about Seahorse Magazine. It sounds charming.
Well, thanks, Rick, and thanks to you and Karen for having me talk today. Seahorse, we pride ourselves on being expensive and hard to find, which is contrary to U.S. magazine market policies. Mm-hmm. It's a publication that's done in Lymington in the U.K., which, as most know, is kind of the home of, some would say, the home of yachting. Most sailboat racing is credited to have started there in the U.K. in the Solent. And this publication started about 30, 40 years ago as a kind of a technical journal of the sport. So we are a monthly. As I say, you won't find us on magazine shelves in the U.S. too often because, you know, we do it the old-fashioned way. We crank out an issue printed every month and send it around the world. Our circulation is somewhere in the order of 25,000-30,000. So it's not big by U.S. standards, but we have a very targeted and loyal following.
Speaking of around the world, the Transpac brings people from all around the world. Can you tell us a little bit about the race that's going to begin tomorrow?
Yeah, and I also have the pleasure of working with Trans-Pacific Yacht Club every 2 years for this race to Honolulu. This is their signature race, abbreviated as the Transpac, but it's really officially known as the Trans-Pacific Los Angeles to Honolulu race. It's been going since 1906, so it's one of the oldest ocean races of its kind in the world. Our first wave of three starts is tomorrow, and some ask why we do it that way. I'm sorry, you all should be asking the questions if you don't mind me prompting myself. But people may think, well, why don't you just have all 90 boats on the starting line? And the reason is fairly simple. It's not a space problem, actually. It's more one of speed. The boats that we have range from 33 feet to 100 feet. And they range in speed from those that are going to have a nice, comfortable ride to Honolulu and others that will be very much an athletic event. So, in order to compress the time schedule of the regatta of this race a little bit, we stagger the start. So we have the slow boat start first tomorrow, and another wave will go off on Friday, and then the final wave will be on Saturday with the fastest boats.
You know, I think about going from L.A. to Diamond Head in this Transpac race, and out there, you're just a grain of sand in this large body of water. Are you at the point now where you think, you know, this is it's no big deal, it's going to be fun, it's going to be a great time, or you think, oh my gosh, this is going to be great moments of peril, and it's going to be quite taxing, or is it somewhere in the middle?
You know, it's all of that, Rick. And for those that, you know, one interesting fact, actually, on this race, we have the largest turnout ever. At 90 boats in the starting line, but at one point we had 108 boats signed up for this, and that far exceeds the old record set in 19, I believe it was 79, of just about 80 boats. This is the 50th edition of the race. Maybe that had something to do with it. But 75% of the skippers in this race are actually doing Transpac for the first time.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah, I was shocked when our pal Kimball Livingston told me that. I thank you for that factoid, Kimball.
Yes. Because,
you know, you'd think, oh, these are the kind of the same guys, and they do it year in, year out, and they keep coming back for more because, you know, there's always a new twist to it, always a new adventure. But it's really great. In my view, taking the, as I was told once, the 30,000-foot view of this is, you know, the sport is not dying. We are very much getting new blood in here. with that kind of statistic, and just seeing the overwhelming numbers that are coming out to compete. So some will have, you know, great terror. They'll go through a squall. It'll be black at night. They'll be hit with a lot of wind and rain and blown up sails and so on. And others will, you know, with a more seasoned crew, have probably a little more controlled ride.
You know, it was actually the ribbon cutting at the Los Angeles Yacht Club for the 50th edition of the Transpac that inspired Sailsport Talk. And I was there, and Marie Rogers, the Commodore of the Los Angeles Yacht Club, had hired a good friend of mine, Chris Tedesco, who's the trumpet player for the LA Chargers, and he was playing the fanfare. And I was doing a music and sports spotlight, which I've been doing on Sports Byline for a bit. And I looked out at that sea of Commodores there, and I said, you know, wait a minute. I'm doing music, but the sport sailing hasn't been covered. And so, and you know that sailing is just something that around the world that there are thousands of races that happen. And you've participated in a lot of those races, not thousands, but, you know, certainly many of the significant races.
That's correct. And I'm fortunate now actually to be passing that on to the next generation. I just got back from Slovenia and the Junior 470 World Championship, where my son Trevor competed representing the U.S.
Cool.
And the 470, as you know, is an Olympic class. And we are fortunate to have a patron who's shares the vision of trying to inspire, you know, highly talented youth toward the future in this sport. And it was really interesting, you know, and this sport bridges so many divides and cultures and languages, and, you know, it's remarkable. I really, really like this sport.
A couple more questions for champion sailor Dobbs Davis. You know, it's interesting is we've been doing this show a few months now, and I always hear about what class boats are in, whether it's Sail GP or in the Olympics and the dinghies, and this race. Come on out, 30 feet, 100 feet, whatever you want. I kind of like the fact that you don't have to have the exact same kind of boat.
You know, that's an excellent observation, Rick, and one that I actually – it's almost my day job. I work for an organization called the Offshore Racing Congress, and they develop a system to handicap boats so that everybody can sail on an equal basis. And the trick there and the approach that's done both by ORC and the U.S. equivalent called ORR, and that's used in this race, is through measurement process of the sails, the boat, even the crew weight. You know, everything that contributes to speed of the boat is measured. And it's put through a formulation called a velocity prediction program, VPP. And with the VPP, you can actually scientifically model the performance of the boat. And with the Transpac, we have a model of what the wind direction and wind speed is on average of this race. So using the model, using the VPP for each boat, we can therefore give a rating for each boat. And so each boat will be timed and will be scored according to its rating on the Transpac model and its elapsed time down the course.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, Dobbs, you also umpire. And so, can you tell us a little bit about some of your umpiring experiences and where you do that from?
Well, truth be told, I haven't done any umpiring in a few years. I was very active for a while in the World Match Race Tour, both as a sailor and then sometimes later on as an umpire. In fact, I trained as an umpire to get better as a sailor because umpires, as you know, and just like referees in any sport, if you know their side of the game as a competitor, it kind of makes you better for strategizing and tactics and so on. But yeah, that was a match race umpiring, and it's still very much alive. The discipline's alive. It's just not quite at the same level as it used to be a while ago. And there's lots of different reasons for that, but I don't know that that's the focus of this program.
Well, actually, the focus is you, and since you did this, it's okay to talk about this.
Yeah, all right. Well, I mean, umpiring is a way to get, you know, a rules call on the field. So just like basketball or soccer or any other sport, you know, if somebody infringes on a rule, you can get a ruling from an official straight away. That's versus, you know, the normal way people sail this sport is if they have a problem with the rules and a competitor, they protest, and the protester may or may not acknowledge that foul and do a penalty turn, or they have to bring it in front of a jury. So umpiring was a way to kind of cut the corner on that and get immediate decisions on the playing field.
One last question for you, Dobbs. Let's just say your heart of hearts, I take you to the boat store and I go, look, you're going to be in the trans pack. Pick any boat you want. What are you going with?
Rick, I'm laughing because yesterday when I was going through my security protocols to get on the plane in Brussels to come back to the U.S., the guy asked me what I did for a living. I said, well, I do consulting for sailboat racing. And he said, oh, yeah? So what would you have, a TP-52 or a Swan?
Wow.
You don't get that every day.
Well, it indicates that the level of awareness of sailing as a sport is really much higher in an ambient way in Europe than it is here. And I told him a TP, you know, a Swan is a beautiful boat, but too slow for me.
All right. And for more information about this, and someone's listening and they're like, I got to get in this next year. What do they do?
Well, our website is actually quite good. There's many, many, many different resources on that website, transpacyc.com. Lots of information on different dropdowns. And if I could put a plug in, I will be doing a daily video analysis of the race that will be uploaded on the TransPac YouTube channel, and I think get transmitted also through our social media channels. So starting this Thursday and going mostly every day during the race, I'll do about a 10-minute analysis of what's happening on the race course.
Just real quick, how many days is this race going to take?
Well, obviously it depends on what kind of boat you're on and how fast it is. The record was set 2 years ago by Comanche. It's a little over 5 days.
Wow.
In a 100-foot monohull. And if you do the math, that's pretty darn fast. Comanche's competing again this year, but I spoke with a weather guy this morning. I don't know that we'll have quite the same conditions they had 2 years ago, but it actually looks okay. Looks favorable for breeze. So expect anywhere from 6 to 14 days, depending on the size of boat you're on.
Days and nights.
Days and nights.
That's
no
right.
Anything out there, you just keep going.
And you're looking at, what, 200, 300, 400 miles a day, in best case scenario?
Well, 8 knots is 200-some miles a day, right? So, and that's about an average pace. I think most of the fleet will do this course in between 9 and, say, 11 or 12 days.
That's Dobbs Davis. Make sure to check out the website. Once again, transpacyc.com. Dobbs, great stuff, man. Welcome home, and best of luck with the race.
Great to talk to you.
Very good. Thanks, Karen and Rick.
All right. You know what's funny? He just got off a plane from Belgium. He's going to be jet-lagged in the middle of a race, but that's kind of exciting.
Well, he's actually in Annapolis, Maryland right now. So
oh,
that's
wow.
where he was calling from. That's his home base.
And now he's got to get out to L.A. and then get in a boat and go to Diamond Head. As always, great guests. Great having you in.
Yeah, next week I'm going to be calling you from the British Virgin Islands.
She's
on a sailboat.
And you are in a crew.
Well, I am the first mate. So I'm chartering the boat. And
so
then,
if the captain goes over, you're in charge.
I am in charge, yeah.
You got a smile on your face like you're hoping it'll happen. Karen, thanks as always. And we'll talk to you from BVI.
9:37 on Tuesday next week.
I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back.